conversation today. Got a good friend with us. Go ahead and introduce yourself and kind of who you work for and the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah, so Rob Yoder here, guided with Elk Creek Outfitting here since January of 04 is when I signed up there. So 20 plus years, where I was born and raised in Ohio. You know, it's a dream of everyone's back there in the Midwest to see the West, to get to experience it. You know, and then you come out here and you realize this is extremely rugged country. This is not for the faint of heart. So just to be able to see it and enjoy it, I feel like I'm in the one percentile that actually sees a lot of this stuff. Yeah, it's tough to get around these mountains if you have any disabilities whatsoever.
I've sat on top of some of those lofty peaks, often thought about people that have will never get to those spots ever.
That is exactly, like, I thank God every day I look up and see the mountains.
I get this controversy with out-of-state and resident guides. Well, both of us are non-resident. Do you think that maybe not growing up looking at these mountains give you a little bit of more excitement, maybe sense of enthusiasm over the years to keep you going?
You know, I would have to agree that yes, there's probably some of that that plays in, because I know other parts of the country do not have the wild, rich area that we do here. And so to come from that, to be able to see this, eat it, sleep it, breathe it around every corner, I mean, it just motivates me more to do it the next day, because I might not be able to at some point. That'll be a bad day when that happens.
Yeah, every year it seems like the sixth week of archery comes a little rougher. Do you think any of your kids will follow in your footsteps wanting to guide?
You know, unfortunately, I'm probably not. I think, you know, they admire it and they love hunting, and they might change their mind later on, but definitely not the two girls. My son, he's really work motivated. He loves to hunt, but he does not have the passion like I do. When I was his age, it literally was every day in the woods. Eat, sleep, breathe it.
So, well, it's hard to make a living doing this.
You know, you're 100% right, especially for a married family man. It takes a lot for the wife to be patient and accepting of a husband that leaves before daylight every morning, hours before daylight, and comes home hours after dark.
Yeah.
And that's literally half of the year with all the seasons. That is pretty challenging, but, you know, come the off season, we try to make up for it. Spend as much time as we can together. And
with, like, the apprentices, you know, we'll get two or three young guys. They don't have girlfriends. They just are out of high school. They come in and they want to do this. And then the second they start getting a girlfriend, or they start thinking about that stuff, or they do a season where the pay is really good during that season, and then they have the winter off and they're like, okay, maybe I should be doing construction, or maybe I should be mechanicking or something, because this isn't working.
No, you got to have fill-in work for sure.
Yeah.
Two guns and tires and a lift kit, and then they're broke again.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something that you have to have a passion for.
And that is true. You know, and then along with that, you know, you're in people's business. And so for a guide, you know, if you're working your tail off for these guys, a lot of these hunters will see it, and they will compensate you for that. I've done very well with the tips. I never talk to a hunter about tips. $100 to one person is like $1,000 to the next. So you don't never know what you're getting. You don't know what to expect. You're just going to pour heart and soul into it and hope they compensate you.
How's your tips been?
They used to be really good. And I honestly didn't change anything. Maybe go a little harder because my name's on it. And they've gotten bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard it said from other outfitters that the outfitter himself generally does not get tipped that good.
Yeah.
And then
I can see where that comes from. Because they're like, well, we already paid you.
I get it.
Yeah, no.
But it is funny. I mean, we always love hearing, like, that the guides do really good with tips and everything. And it's just, we just say it's whatever they feel is fair. It's not a percentage. It's if the guide worked his tail off for you, just say sure thank you somehow. It. And usually,
and that goes a long ways. And I guess where I was going with that is where the weekly paychecks may not take you, the tips will.
Yeah.
You know, if you can be frugal with your money in the off season, it definitely can last much longer and get you through the winter. I've had other CEOs of large companies at the end of a hunt talk about, can I take your work ethic back to my company? Well, shoot, I'm just doing my job. I just do what I would want to see done if I was him. Kind of warms my heart a little bit to see that it's recognized by someone that makes a living off of good employees. You know, some of them, they just, I don't know how they make it in business with non-motivated or people that don't take it serious. Maybe they feel a little entitled or whatnot, but you take someone that, you know, is a family man, someone who's hardworking, shows up on time, does what he says he's going to do. It's all common sense stuff. It's nothing special. If I can do it, anybody can do it. Sometimes you get that one person that sees that and is just like, I don't even care if I kill an animal. This is just incredible.
Yeah, he gets to see you in your element.
Yeah.
He's seeing you see things in the woods that it's telling a story that he doesn't get to see.
Right.
And yep. he's wanting that knowledge, and
yep.
you're the only key to it.
Yep.
That 6 days or however long your hunts are. I like that too. It feels neat to, like, I guess they trust you more than anything.
Absolutely.
You can feel it. They're like, I would follow this dude anywhere. You can just, it's yep. radiating off of
yep.
him. Yeah, that, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, essentially, as a guide, you're not really an employee. You are, but you're not really an employee of the outfit. You're more of self-employed.
Correct.
Because, you know, you don't have a boss breathing down your neck. No. We can't be everywhere that you are. So, right. really, you're taking all of your knowledge. You're working really hard for yourself because... And we explain this to the guides all the time. If you want to continue working with us and continue guiding and continue this, be an awesome guide.
Right.
And then they come back and they book and they say, I don't want to hunt with you guys unless this guy is my guide.
Right.
Well, then that's job security.
Absolutely.
And you can take that. I mean, we don't have fishing permits, so we can't take anybody on a fly fishing trip. But, like Jay, he works for us. He finds clients that are hunting here, and he used to be a fly fishing guide. So he can say, I know this outfit, they offer that.
Sure.
Why don't you call them, request me as a mm-hmm. guide,
yeah.
and then I can do that. You have to have the hard work ethic when nobody's watching you. You have to have responsibility.
I agree.
Advertising skills for yourself.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand that. They just think, well, I'll work for this outfit and they'll give me clients and it'll just be that and it's a paycheck. And that really radiates. Can see it.
Absolutely.
I will look at someone and we'll be like, I don't know if they're going to make it. But then the guys that are going above and beyond for their clients just for the chance to come back next season because mm-hmm. all their clients rebooked and requested them. It's like it really shows that they're determined to make this work. Nothing says that you have to stay right here in Northwest Montana to guide. You can travel right. all yeah. over.
The world, it's endless.
It is wide open. I mean, it really is. If you want to guide year-round, you can.
Yeah, we've had guides that go to Alaska. We had a guide that filled in last year, and he's helping find clients that want to hunt in Northwest Montana, but he also guides in South Dakota, and he does duck hunts and he does turkey hunts, mm-hmm. but he has made himself a client list.
Yep.
And they trust him and they call yep. him and say, what outfit do I have to book with for you to be my guide?
Yeah.
And that's a genius way to do it.
It's way better to do that than what we were talking about earlier, where some of these guys will try to book the hunters on their own without an actual outfitter.
Yes.
That's Russian roulette. That's just not smart.
I don't think people realize that if you book with an outfitter that does not have an outfitter license, is not insured, not only will they lose everything, so will
literally
so will
everything.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clients... They yank your yep. hunting license. You yep. will not be allowed to hunt in yep. a lot of different states.
Most all Western states are neighbored like that.
And it's different in each state. I know in Montana, you should ask your outfitter for their outfitter license
yep.
and make sure that they yep. are insured. and check them out. And Idaho, I believe, is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado, you can just go and guide. You don't have to have an outfitter license, but it is always really nice to make sure that they have insurance and they're not just going to take your money and mm-hmm. you won't see them again.
So essentially, we all work for the Forest Service. As a guide, we're the face of this place,
yep,
this national 100%. Forest. And if we like people to enjoy it, we kind of got to take care of it ourselves. Yep. And the more people that are coming to it and recreate and enjoy the outdoors, which we all love, the more that we got to like police each other,
yep,
make sure that stuff is taken. Maybe that's what we need to do as guides amongst each other, is just...
I do agree.
Yeah.
And that's something for us at our outfit. We make it very clear with the especially new guides that come up, and we bring it up in guide meetings. Kind of the whole dynamic around, you know, keeping your truck clean, don't litter. Keep it clean, keep it up for everybody. It's the hunter's dollars that keep it open for everyone. And so it's very important that even our hunters that show up, that they don't see littered roadsides, trash in the ground blinds, you know, trashy pickup trucks, that kind of stuff. It's just, it's not good.
I've caught clients sticking sandwich bags under rocks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I've literally, behind their bag, picked them up and put it in their backpack without them knowing it.
I've did it right after yeah. they did it. I've walked up and flipped the rock over beside of them, picked it up, and threw it at them and told them that yeah. I would, whatever state they were from, I would like this state not to look like theirs. And then I just get back and sit down.
It's a good way to approach it. No, it's just not acceptable. There's pack it in, pack it out.
Yeah, and especially in camps, you have to walk the line, because yeah. we had the camp set up. Luckily, we hung a trail camera, but I got a notice in the mail that the Forest Service wanted us to go down and speak to them. We had violations for leaving food in our tent and litter everywhere. And I was like, we haven't even been there. The fire that year kept us out of our camp. I was panicked because we did not want that ding on our record. So mm-hmm. he went and pulled the card. And here, a couple guys went and they used all of our stuff.
Oh my.
They left their food wrappers. You know, I went into the meeting and I showed them, like, here's pictures. We don't know who these people are, you know, and they accepted that.
That's awesome.
Which was awesome.
Good thing you hung that camera.
Yeah.
My word.
But I don't think that people that aren't in this industry realize that the Forest Service, they let us know what we're allowed to do.
Sure.
With the permits that we're allowed, and I'm sure where Elk Creek can go is limited.
Yeah,
and
very much, yeah.
It's nice. It can get frustrating sometimes because, you know, we can't go to Peak, but we know that there's like nice animals there.
Sure.
There's some
it's
nice hunts, and it's like, you
side.
Just look at it and you're like, oh, why can't we hunt that?
Yeah.
But it is nice because then it also limits how much competition can
correct.
Be here.
No, you could hunt that for yourself.
Yes.
You just couldn't guide
yeah.
over there, correct?
Yep. Usually we try and set that rule too, if our guides want to hunt for themselves during guiding season, to just kind of go on the outskirts.
Correct.
Especially when
yep.
clients are in camp. So
yep. That's something we try to practice too, is, you know, if a hunter, let's say a hunter is wanting to hunt on their own, they don't want to just turn and go home. Well, we don't want to advise them to hunt where we just hunted. We're going to send you outside of our unit, but we're going to try to point you in a direction that you have a legit chance.
Yeah.
Same way with other locals. You know, if we're trading, sharing hunt spots in different areas, we're always in our undertone or advising them areas outside of where we're guiding.
That's smart business.
Absolutely. Yeah, guys, you know, we spend so much time scouting and trying to find, you know, areas that we're going to take paying hunters. To have someone eavesdrop or, you know, overstep, and or just simply a slip of the tongue, it can really make it difficult when it's actually time to go.
We see it all the time with clients adding waypoints to their OnX. They're all listening.
Oh, yeah.
And you can look at the clients and be like, you are a hardcore hunter. I think you are here for research purposes.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the sports shows, a large portion of the people that come through, that's what they're doing. That's what I would be doing.
Yeah.
I would want to look at your kill book, and anybody in that book can do it. I'm looking that I can do it too, guaranteed. So we got to hear a good story and a bad story with clients. So what do you want to start with?
Always start with the bad first. No, I had a younger gentleman. He seemed like he really wanted to learn a lot. He seemed ambitious out the gate. Didn't take very long to see that, you know, all that gear he had on was brand new. He didn't never spend much time in the woods. So I put him on a horse and we went in. I find this nice mealy buck that's bedded. I put him on it. He shoots it. Where the deer balled up, it was kind of down in some blow down in a hole. There's really tough spot to work out. As I'm working him, skinning and everything, I asked the hunter to hold a leg. He definitely was like, I'm not touching that. No problem. Trying to be professional. I went ahead and took care of it. Got the deer off the hill. He was from Colorado, and he wanted to... He had said early on, I don't want a Colorado bull, meaning a small rag bull. We had seen other bulls throughout the hunt. None we got a shot on. But the last day of the hunt, I find two Colorado bulls way up high. So, naturally, last day, let's go. Okay. So we had a hike from hell, but we get up to them. Bulls are only 150 yards away. One's facing one way, one's facing the other. So I get the camera rolling and I tell him, you know, after he's getting solid on the rest, I tell him, shoot the top one. He's the bigger one. So the guy shoots, makes a great shot. Bull drops dead in his tracks and I'm videoing, so you can hear me talking. I says, bull dropped, good shot, stay on him. Boom, gun goes off again. He shot the second bull. So that kind of makes things ugly.
Yeah.
So anyways, I tried to be as cordial and casual as I could. Took care of both animals, make sure the meat was cool. Got off the hill. He's trying to pay me off. He's trying to get me to tag the second bull. I don't know who this guy is. I just know that I'm not compromising my paycheck for an animal for someone that I don't know. And so we get down and I pull the outfitter to the side and I let him know what happened and I caught it on camera. So naturally you got to report it, and the guy got citations, lost his license in all the western states. Even along with that, I know people foul up. I don't believe this was a foul up. He never made an excuse for it. Instead, he kept trying to get someone else to tag it. You know, just everything he was doing was not cool.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't even able to have a cordial conversation without being just utterly rude in everything that he says. Needless to say, it was kind of a bittersweet to see that hunt end. Nevertheless, those are the ones you remember. You know, I've done tons of hunts, and many I totally forget. Some of them I wish I would forget. That's one of them.
Yeah, and you never know, because you can get undercover clients in. You have to do everything right, because there can be someone undercover and you don't want to be the guy that costs us everything. Honesty is always the best policy.
Yep.
We had someone do that. It was in my learning year. So it was the previous outfitter, and the client shot this tiny little mule deer, which was fine. That's what we thought he wanted. It was legal, so he scunned it out, got it back. But the client said, you know, was like, I'll pay you to just kick that thing down over the bank and we'll just act like killed it. And he went right to the outfitter and was like, I did not do that. I made him tag it.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that if he comes back, mm-hmm. you might want to put him with a guide that wouldn't do that. And I thought that was so rude, because if you're going to take an animal's life, you need to, you know, be respectful about it. And he took the head of it and tossed it in the dumpster and left just mad. And we were like, okay, well, that's one of those ones that we will never answer a phone call from him again, because that irritated me because, you know, the animal lost its life for that.
Yeah.
And you should be respectful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've had two where you're guiding an attorney at bear hunting, and the bears, you know, you spot a bear up in the cliffs like they are. This one's not actually that far. But him being in his 60s, he was a flatlander and out of shape. No problem, nothing against that. We'll take our time to get there. But maybe a quarter of the way up there, he's really rethinking his decision. And he's like, Rob, just take my gun. Just go ahead and shoot it. I'm an attorney. If anything comes of it, we'll take care of it. You know, that kind of thing. No, man, well, you're okay. Let's just take our time. Bear's not going anywhere. Let's just get up there and do it at your speed. And we did, and that was great. But nevertheless, that's one of these occasions where if I didn't respond the way I did, and let's say I took his advice and went ahead and shot the bear, well, my kids' meals are at risk here.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
So. Yeah, where maybe a younger guide that's new to this,
right,
where they're
may
like
have got talked into it.
Yeah, because you know they're like, well, what's the harm? I'll look like a good guide because that animal got killed and nobody will know the difference, and it's just not worth it.
No, and it's not smart to even brag about a kill that is not proper. I mean, that's something that'll haunt you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a story similar to this, but I believed I was in the right and I did kill an animal for a client, but it was not illegal. It was in legal take. I finished a bear off.
Sure.
Yeah. We were running it with dogs in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very old client, and he had been with the hunting outfit, oh geez, probably 30 times.
A lot
of times. And we treated this bear, and he made a poor shot on it with a giant gun. Well, the bear wasn't stopped, and it kept traveling, so I had to turn a couple dogs loose. Well, they baited this thing up on the ground. And
oh, man, that's ugly.
Yeah, it was not pretty what was going on, and I had to finish the bear off. And I got scolded by the outfitter. Not anything like you would think for finishing a bear off for a client. I should have waited until the client got there, no matter what the circumstances. It was very inhumane, like truly, like what was going on. That's why I shot it. It was gross. So I actually packed my stuff and was leaving, and the other guides asked me to stay.
Really?
Yeah. I would break the law legally before I unethically did something poorly to an animal.
Yeah.
You
have to apply, as a guide, you have to apply common sense from your day to day.
I don't have really, I got a bad guiding story for where I was a bad guide with a client. I've been sitting here in thought over which one I was going to say.
Yeah, let's hear this. This people admitting these things generally doesn't happen. Yeah. This should be interesting.
So we'll do a Lost Hunter one, because that one's good. That one, there's no really anybody's at fault, so I don't have to take no blame. So we have an older gentleman, and he can't walk hardly at all. And he's on a 2-on-1 with a guy that can walk fairly decent. So we're hunting a road system, so we find a nice opening. His bucks are rutting around, so we pop him down there. It's pouring down rain. We hunt around most of the day, come back through to get... This gentleman's name was Chirp. With a nickname like Chirp, you can imagine it was... he's chirping all the time, so he was a character. So we drift back to pick this guy up at the spot. He's not there. So it's been pouring down rain, so we just let it go and just go on back to the truck. We figure he's already back there, got the truck warmed up. Nope, not there.
That changes things.
Now I'm getting nervous. Well, there's still, I got another guide and another hunter that was, we were hunting all the same area. These were older gentlemen. And I'm like, maybe they come back and ate and they just gathered him up. I'll wait till everybody gets back here before I start really getting nervous.
Sure.
The only thing I had in the back of my mind was, like, if he goes downhill, there is a little house in the bottom of there. He's guaranteed going to funnel down out to, but it's going to look real embarrassing on me. Really embarrassing.
Yep.
Now I'm panicking. Now the clients can see I'm panicking. Everybody's back at the truck. So now we're going and looking for Chirp. And it's getting dark, and it's been raining all day, and he's an older guy. So I'm shooting a 10-millimeter handgun off when I go around every point of this road.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm figuring I'll get some kind of response, something.
Nothing.
12 shots. I did four series of three. The old warning, boom, boom, boom. Nothing. I get to the exact spot where this guy's at again, second time, and I start like circling, searching around. I find an arrow kicked out in a bare spot with, it had an arrow, not like a shooting arrow, like he made it out of sticks.
Sure.
So I start traveling that direction. I see orange.
Oh boy.
So I'm like running up to him, finally chirps alive, no harm come to him. I was like, dude, you got us all nervous. I was like, we've been hollering since like an hour and a half before dark, and I've been shooting a handgun. Well, I turned my hearing aids down because the best time of the day was coming up, and I didn't want him to be dead. So he tells me this. I told him I'm shooting a handgun. He doesn't believe me until I show him my empty magazine. And then he's like, you guys are all serious out looking for me? So he plays along with it, that me shooting the handgun off scared off this elk he was just about to shoot, or deer, or some kind of story he made up.
He never even knew he was lost. Because he wasn't. He didn't know anything. He just thought just that, they were just having a great day, and they were just taking a little longer to pick him up, and nothing was... I was having a panic attack here because I'm getting in-reach messages, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to call my first wife and say we lost someone, you know? And he was just as happy as could be. He thought it was hilarious that we were all panicked over him.
I believe at least he had a good sense of humor.
I believe it was the first year we were in business.
So it was. It was.
Even worse.
It was.
So I got a good story. I had a client that... I didn't guide him in archery season, and he come out and he blowed his feet completely apart. Couldn't really go, but he went the rest of the week. Come back out in rifle season with both tags, an elk and a deer. We have terrible weather. It's very foggy, but this guy, he's in very good shape. His feet just let him down last time, and he got his boots well broke in. He's ready to go. We cover a ton. We're on two hunts a day. What I would usually do, a single hunt, we're checking two areas off. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Weather starts getting horrible on us. It starts pouring down rain the end of part of the week. So we go to timber knocking. It's down to Saturday. And we jump this herd of elk. We sneak up this ridge. And the thermals are still going good for us. And it's raining. And I'm thinking it's going to be good the whole time because they should be dropping cloud cover. And all of a sudden, we're in tight on this whole group of elk. And there's two legal bulls in there.
Oh, boy.
And the wind starts shifting. And there's elk all around us. So the elk bust out of there. They circle down around. I kind of know where they're going. They've been moved. Mm-hmm. So we actually beat them down to the bench that they were trying to get to.
Nice.
About get another shot there. It doesn't happen. Spook them again. So now, the third time, is pretty much it's over. Somehow, by the grace of God, I kind of knew these elk, they were going to ring and go down across this creek in this one spot. So we're running. We get down in there, and I can see him single and filing through the fog. And I'm there with my binoculars, and I can't really see that good. And he's actually using my rifle, and everything's steamed up. It's pouring down rain, so you can't use scopes or... We'd have been better off to have open sights 30-30 at 120 yards. I see a nice bull, legal bull, so I'm telling him, trying to explain where it's at in the excitement, you know how that goes. It's in the tree leaning with the 45-degree angle with the one with no branches up the one side, this, that. And he's like, I'm pretty sure I'm on it. Boom, the gun goes off. I hear impact. I didn't get to see that elk move. And he goes, did I hit it? And I was like, you hit an elk. I was like, for sure. I was like, whether we were shooting at the same elk that I was looking at, I don't know. And as we're sitting there discussing it, that dark gloom comes over that we might have just messed up. We might have actually shot a cow, or there was a spike in that group. Like, was he seeing the same thing as I was?
Right.
And we're going back and forth. So we get down to there with the tree on the 45-degree angle. Pow, a hair right there. I'm like, okay, you shot the bull that I was looking at. I'm 99.9% sure. So we just sat down right there, and we let another half hour go by. We got up, and this is probably now an hour's went by. I didn't know where he hit this thing, and we had plenty of time, so we just, the emotional, like, wreck of...
That's the longest hour of the day when you got to sit and wait for that.
Yeah, and we were... I like to let that... marinate. I love to watch that. And I will set my clock, and we will move until that second.
Yep.
So we get up, and we don't walk 60 yards, and we jump up a giant bull. Jump up a bull I've been trying to kill. I knew it was in that group, and I figured we gut punched the big bull.
Oh, no.
So I'm trying to get him to make another shot. The bull goes up, the old notorious, get on the other side of the ridge and do the old look back. I'm like, kill him, kill him, kill him. can't get a shot, the bull moves off.
Can you tell if he's hit?
Can't tell if he's hit, but in just, I was following blood and the track, and I'm like, I was for sure that was the animal that we were going after. We run over the next hill on the track. I'm excited, not thinking, and we were still on that game trail, and that bull's waiting for us to come over on that game trail. So when we jumped him the second time and moved him, I skirted up the hill a bunch for this third time. I figured we're going to cover ground, but we're not going to be on the same trajectory. And then when we got to the next, let's say, washboard on the hill, we come down the ridge real quiet, and there he was standing looking back on his backtrack for us.
Yeah.
Couldn't get a shot again. So I'm like, all right, we're going to chase this bull clear out of the country. So we gather up, we go back to the lodge, sit all night. We go back in the morning. I take one of our guides and I give him the client, and I was like, if that bull bedded down and he's not dead, he's going to come out on that game trail for 100%. And you know where that game trail comes down and crosses that creek. Go down and sit in there, and we're going to follow this game trail, and I'm going to follow that track and that blood, whatever I can find. Would have been pouring down rain, so I'd very hopeful. Yeah. Wasn't sure we were going to find any blood. But if we jump that animal, he's going to come right to you. I didn't go 500 yards from where we had jumped the bull the first time, and I found a 4x5 dead.
Oh man,
it was a sweet story, but
and his reaction, he had tagged out, he had killed a pretty decent mule deer right before that.
It was almost as big as his elk.
But you would have thought he killed that giant elk. I mean, he was so excited, and he comes back every other year. He has to take a vacation with his wife, and then he can hunt. So every other year, he's booked for as long as we own the business.
Oh, that's great.
He's just one of those clients that love to suffer.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
And that's suffering here is going to just the everyday norm when you're in the mountains.
Yeah.
A nuclear engineer.
Really?
Complete genius. And I don't know how he has conversations with a dipstick like me all week.
Wow.
Fumbling for words, and I can't talk very well. And
he probably brings him back to planet Earth, really.
It does. I have to wheel him in every once in a while, because in rifles, usually archery hunts, but in rifle season, he was sitting there and he's like, mathematically, you could virtually shoot this gun until the bullet quit. I was like, what? He's like, yeah. It's like shooting a missile. And he's like, doing all these cows. Like, dude, you're a genius. How are you?
Another thing too, for these hunters, we're in a very outdoor rich area. Some of these guys will show up with these long guns. Long distance shooting is becoming very popular. I myself am a long distance shooter. I always try to get as close as I can first. But, if you have to reach out there, I want to be able to do so.
It's more ethical to shoot a long range gun at 600 yards than poke a hope.
Absolutely. You're
300.
Or absolutely. What, I'm
not down on caliber, but it's more the scope setup and the gun setup.
Yeah, it is. And then, of course, practice. It doesn't matter if you're shooting a 30-06 at 100 yards or a 300 Remington Ultra Mag at 1,000 yards. One thing we started doing here recently, which I think's going to work out pretty good, is doing these long-distance shooting classes. We advertise them on our website, and then once a month in the off-season, we'll get a group of guys together and go do it. It is absolutely incredible, the knowledge that is put in 2.5 days. There's 200 rounds per person shot, multi ranges, multi angles, and then at the end of it all, we take them up and do an actual backcountry setup. When they leave that 2.5 day, they are ready for the hunt. I mean, they're mentally prepared to what they're going to get into. The flip side to that is getting having some of these guys will order a custom gun that's built and broken and shipped to the lodge. And of course, when they show up, we expect them to shoot their rifle. Some don't want to. We don't never let them shoot at an animal further than what they can prove on the range. Capitalize on the ability to practice long distance shooting, I think, is just huge.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. It really gives you that level of confidence that is needed to go in the woods with.
I agree 100%. There's so much controversy over it, but if it's used ethically,
Yes.
Ethics.
It gotta be. There should be no other way.
And one person's ability is not the same as someone else's ability.
Yeah.
I like to let people use my rifle because mm-hmm. I know if it's a poor shot, I know what my bullet does.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that might sound weird, them shooting a foreign gun and things like that. That's a chance that I would rather take than maybe not feeling the rifle as well, is knowing what that gun does whenever it hits sure. an animal. And I'm a firm believer on that 28 with that elite bullet. It does
deadly.
It is deadly.
Yeah.
And it's designed for long range. And these guys that show up with certain guns and they're not shooting a coefficient bullet, these schools like that, that eliminates all the stupidity showing up.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't really bother me, but when you think about it, and we've known people that have had incidents. We guide in a grizzly bear rich area.
Yes. Oh and boy.
We kind of nonchalantly kind of like go about it. And I think that's just because we're in this country so much that you just,
correct.
You lose maybe that little bit of fear thinking about it. But a large portion of the country is scared to death to go out eyesight yes. of the pickup here.
Yep. On to that, I would have to say it. No matter what you're doing, if you're riding a stunt bike, you know, after doing it a while, you're going to become much more comfortable doing the flips than you would at the beginning. You come out here in the mountains, grizzly bear area, you see the signs that says be bear aware. You know, your hunters are always asking, what are you going to do if we get charged by a grizzly? The smart comment is, you just got to be faster than the person you're with.
Yeah. All the guides usually have some little savvy comment then.
But in the grand scheme of things, I do believe that how you handle each situation, each grizzly bear encounter, is what's actually going to make the difference of you guys getting out safe versus yeah. getting chewed up real bad.
With us going in the woods all the time, you seem to get hyper aware. I know that if you pull me out of the woods and take me to Walmart at the end of rifle season after I've been in the woods for 13 weeks pretty much
yeah.
straight, I'm like a cat that you just took to the veterinarian, man.
His head, out.
His head's on a swivel. Like, sounds are so yeah. loud to me and smells are yep. so vivid.
Yeah.
And I think that you just become hyper aware of everything more you're in
yeah.
the woods. And
I agree.
I don't let it bother me very much. I have turned tail and walked. I have left hunting areas because I've trailed up a grizzly's backside oh, yeah. for a couple hundred yards and it's still on the same place that I'm going. And I'm like, I know where exactly that thing's
yep.
going, and I'm wanting to go to the exact same spot. I'm not a sissy, but we're going somewhere else. Just mainly because I don't want to have to deal with it. There's
yeah.
so many of them now, and the laws are so strict. It's just, it's something I don't want to have to deal with
yeah.
our business.
Yep.
And
yep. That is exactly one of the fast things I thought about. I got charged by a sow here a couple years ago, and she came full tilt without any warning. I mean, it was point blank in your face. She's coming hard, coming. The ultimate mother is ticked off and she is headed my way as fast as she can go. Of course, I pull sidearm, I start hollering at her, and I'm good enough with a pistol to know I want her very close before I start opening up.
Well, you also know what a handgun's capable of.
And what it's not capable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted her to get close enough, and this whole incident happened so fast that you don't have time to think, you only have time to react. When she came to roughly bumper-to-bumper length, I'm rage engage. I mean, I'm expecting to empty my clip in the last 20 feet. Well, she spun and kept the momentum and blew past me, but that told me she bluffed, but she left me between her and the cubs. I know I don't want to shoot her. However, I was fully legal and in my rights to self-defense.
She's coming back.
She's
too.
Coming back, absolutely. So I don't want to run. I don't want to, I guess, show fear.
You're thinking angles. You're trying to cut that angle
off
away from her.
And that's exactly it. Keep my back in a safe direction. Back up slowly as I'm using out of there, but I don't know what triggered me, but I looked down and right there's three, maybe 5-6 foot long dead alder branches laying next to each other. And I thought, perfect, I can do something with that. So I just reholstered my pistol. I grabbed one and I smacked the base of this tree as hard as I can. And now mind you, this all happens all of this happened in less than 30 seconds. And as soon as I hit that tree, them cubs start bawling. Here comes mama. Well, and I grab the next one. I mean, I'm getting with, I'm making as much noise, as big, as loud as I can. Here she comes flying full tilt, right exactly where I was just standing, literally a few feet next to me. She blew up and grabbed them cubs. And I grab the next one. I mean, I'm beating on this tree as hard as I can. She moves the cubs up, kept rushing me. She'd come down towards me multiple times over and would move the cubs up and rush me again. When the dust settles and you start thinking about what I could have done differently, well, I'm glad I didn't do anything differently. I'm kind of surprised I acted the way I did. But you only have time to react. You don't have time to think these things through. If I would have turned and ran, she'd have had me. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
If I would have balled up and squalled like a little kid, she'd have had me. But because I stood, because I made noise, because I sold it to her, I was bigger than she is. I believe that's what saved my bacon.
Yep, I agree 100%.
Yeah.
Do you think if you had had bear spray and she'd have been coming, it would have stopped a bear?
I have mixed feelings on bear spray.
So do I.
I just do not... I'm not sold on it. I just am not. That is such a big, powerful animal. I think if they want you, they're going to get you.
Yeah.
And you've got stories like that guy in Annis that got emptied the bear spray and got jumped on three different times. He's lucky to have made it out alive. He got his skull crushed and chewed up real bad.
I always... All guides always come up with some kind of little jokingly thing for every question that's asked, and I always tell them I don't want to be in a fight blind, because every time I've seen bear spray get deployed, usually messing around, yeah, just even fooling with
somebody,
it
gets in.
You can't see because of the
I think it hurts us worse than it does the bear. Really do.
Yes.
Morgan's been sprayed.
I wanted to see if I could, because I was like, I don't even know if I can spray this. I just carry it around. So I sprayed it, and like about 30 seconds later, I wasn't thinking, and I walked right where,
oh my.
Like, you would think that much time, like, it just disperse. No, it melted the skin off my eyelids.
Yeah.
I was down.
Yeah. And it's fast acting, and it doesn't just stop.
Yeah.
I did similar, where if I'm going to pack it, I want to know what it does. So you go out, you check the wind, you pull it, and you engage. Okay, so you put the little clip back on, shove it back in a pocket. Not thinking, I touch the tip with my finger. A little later, I'm wondering why my face is just lit up. Literally, I mean, I have ice bag on my face. I'm trying to get this fire put out, but
I had a client release the safety, come off, hit it with his elbow, and he had his shirt untucked, and it completely just filled up his shirt from sweating. I mean, you can imagine hiking.
Oh yeah. I got one for you.
Then go ahead.
a new archery hunter, didn't know anything about anything out west, and bless his heart, he was very smart, he's a very intelligent guy, very kind guy, he just didn't know. Anyways, we took horses in, so we left early. We're miles in, and at 10 in the morning, the sun's coming up, starting to warm up. We sit down and take a break, and he yanks his shoes off, and you could tell he's not wanting to talk. He's very uncomfortable. And so he asked me a little later, he's like rubbing his feet, and I said, are you okay? He said, man, my feet are burning. I said, you want to stick them in the water down there? We'll go down to the creek, and you can get them down in there and cool them off. He kind of pauses for a second, and he hesitantly asked me, he says, you're not really supposed to spray your clothes the night before with bear spray, are you?
Oh my goodness.
I says, I think our hunt's over. We need to get out of here and get you some clothes before that's unfinished coming up the rest of the way. Because he did. He hung all his clothes out the night before and sprayed them all, the shoes, the socks, everything.
Oh. Sweat activates that stuff.
Sweat activated it, buddy. He was a miserable man.
Oh my goodness. I bet.
Yeah, that hunt was over for the day.
Oh, that would be miserable.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to wrap this up. We're going to have to do it again. You're going to have to bring some guides from Elk Creek over at the end of season, and we could have a little chit-chat and share our good stories.
Yep.
And
We've got a couple good ones. I'm sure that could you know, shine a little light on a few subjects.
Showing that we work together and things like that. Yep. And that's just showing that we're trying.
I think it's important.
Yep. Well, thank you very much, and good luck this season.
You bet. Good talking to you guys.